Welcome to episode 24. I'm Stuart McCullough, I'm the CEO of VHAA. And starting with this week's industrial roundup, and in particular with community health, just a reminder to community health members that we had sent out a bulletin recently on the 16th of June, which required members to return an authority to act for some of the outstanding agreements, and that is due by no later than the 28th of June. Also, that same bulletin included a notice of employee representational rights, which must also be issued to employees who are eligible to be covered by that agreement by no later than the 30th of June 2017. With respect to our health service members, there is a reminder that there is a meeting of the Health and Allied Managers and Administrative Workers Reference Group on 2 p.m. on the 29th of June. And that VHAA has rescheduled the SDPPWG for July to another date to facilitate the attendance of all the parties. With respect to dental therapists, we have met with the CPSU as an initial discussion to discuss the replacement of that agreement. And also this week we have had the ANMF Occupational Health and Safety Working Group meet. Each of these meetings is the subject of a summary that can be found on the VHAA community app. Just a reminder for those people who have not yet utilised the app, it's now being regularly utilised by some 300 VHAA members. It remains the best place for you to get a daily update as to the particular meetings and activities that we're undertaking, and a great place to post questions that you can share with your colleagues at other health services. That's it for this week's Industrial Roundup. Welcome to the weekly update, where we go in depth with a particular subject. Joining me this week is Principal Workplace Relations Advisor and amateur futurist, Tim Nagel. Welcome, Tim.
Thanks, Stuart. Good to be here.
Would you be good enough to lift up the box and reveal this week's subject clue? So for the benefit of those who are listening, would you describe the object that you see?
It's an image of George W. Bush.
So just for the benefit of those who are watching on camera, if you look closely at the crystal, you'll see George W. Bush. It's quite a ghostly image. You might recall that not so long ago, in the not so distant past, he was regarded as the worst president of the modern age. They seem like halcyon days. And that brings us to this week's subject, which is transition to retirement. Tim, one of the features of the new agreements that have been struck in the past year is the introduction of transition to retirement provisions. Why are they a feature of the agreement?
A lot of employers were using transition to retirement clauses or mechanisms as a way of retaining employees within the workplace.
So just on that point, these are things that were not uncommon within the sector, but they weren't necessarily supported by the agreements.
Yeah, so that's right. So the last EBA round, we've placed them into the agreement so that others can benefit from some of the practices that some employers were doing.
So what's the purpose of these provisions?
So the purpose of the provisions are to remove the disincentive for people to transition to retirement. So
just in terms of that reference to disincentive, what's an example of the kind of disincentive that might otherwise exist?
Well, our agreements pay long service leave out, for instance, at the contracted hours at the time. So if you're a full-timer and been in the workplace for a very long time, but for whatever reason are unable to continue at that full-time rate, then you're left with the difficult situation where if you do leave the sector or reduce your hours, then you'll be disadvantaged by that.
Okay, so the way that the agreements used to be is that there was a built-in impediment to the flexible use of leave entitlements, and one of these, one of the purposes of this clause is to support a more flexible use to remove that impediment.
Yeah, that's right.
So whereabouts are these provisions within the public sector agreements?
So they're in all the agreements that were negotiated through the last EBA round. So, for instance, the Nurses and Midwives Agreement, they're located at Clause 24. The Health and Allied Services Managers and Administrative Workers Agreement, they're at 21 and 20 respectively. The mental health services agreement, they're at clause 24, and finally the health professionals, they're at clause 27.
So that has all the hallmarks of a potential common clause, but it does beg the question, are all the provisions under the agreements the same?
No, they're not, unfortunately. We did do a lot of work to try and get them as close as possible. The Health and Allied Services Agreement and the Health Professionals Agreement are virtually the same. The nurses is also based on the same framework, but just slightly different in a couple of different places. Not real substantive changes, but just they don't look exactly the same. The mental health agreement is probably the outlier with that. They already had a lot of these provisions in their agreements. So what we did during the last EBA round is consolidate them into one place.
Oh, so they had provisions that were scattered through the agreement.
That's right.
And they've been brought together all into the one place.
That's right.
So to get into the substance of the clauses, what do they contain?
So in terms of what they contain, so they're entitled transition to retirement. The mental health agreement is a bit of a broader application. It's called retention and transition to retirement.
Just to be that little bit different?
Yes, that's right. So the first thing they set out is just... The first subclause says that employees may advise their employer in writing of their intention to retire within the next 5 years from their employer and may participate in a transition to retirement arrangement.
So a couple of words stand out in that provision. Employees may. That is may rather than must, not obligated to do so, but it's an option that's available. And intention is probably the other one. Bearing in mind that people may have an intention to retire, but for whatever reason, things may intervene and change that intention.
Yeah, this isn't locking people into that retirement. Retirement's a big decision, and 5 years out, lots of things can happen in 5 years, as we learnt with the last global financial situation, is that situations will change. So it's about intention, not obligation.
So the mental health agreement does not have a reference to the five-year timeframe as such, but they all talk about putting a request in writing. Why is that?
With a lot of these things, it's best that both parties are clear about what's being requested and what the answer is as well. So more often than not, reducing things to writing is the way to seek that clarity. And also provide you a reference point to go back to later on if you need to answer any questions or clarify what was agreed or discussed.
So it goes to that issue, if the parties are contemplating a change to the working arrangements, that there should be a documented record of that just to ensure that everybody's clear about what the desired request was and indeed, I guess, what the outcome is.
Yeah, that's right.
So the Health and Allied Agreement has an additional sentence there at the start, and I'm just wondering what that sentence is and what its purpose is.
Yeah, so the Health and Allied Agreement goes on to say that subject to this agreement, a transitionary time arrangement is a permanent arrangement that is agreed between the employee and the employer.
For me, that's a bit of a statement of the obvious. Is that true?
Yeah, so, I mean, that statement applies to them all. I mean, it is a permanent arrangement. What it doesn't mean is that the intention to retire is permanent.
So an important distinction that the transition, say, and if that transition takes the form of a reduction of hours, the reduction of hours is temporary rather than is permanent rather than temporary.
That's right.
But it doesn't mean that the end of the employment is absolutely certain.
Yeah, so it's not a resignation. I mean, I think that's probably where some people might confuse it.
So when people make a request, they're not giving notice.
No, that's right.
Just coming back to the reason for that and that issue of intention that we talked about before, and going to that issue, I guess, of the best laid plans can go awry.
That's right.
For reasons that can't be predicted at the time that a person makes a request. Somebody's household may separate or spouse might pass away. It's easy to imagine a million things that could fundamentally change someone's intention to retire.
And I think it's all about, it's also about balance. So whilst the employer needs some certainty, and that's why the reference to the permanent arrangement, if someone as part of a transition to retirement arrangement, for instance, went to 3 days, then they wouldn't get to that date and it wouldn't revert back to 5 days, for instance. It would just be that 3 days was ongoing, and that's what it means by permanency.
That gives the employer the benefit of being able to replace the hours that have been generated as a result of that reduction with certainty, I guess.
And it's really around that replacement. I mean, employers need to be able to manage their workforce with that certainty.
So just in terms of an example of a transition to retirement arrangement, how might that play out?
So if someone, for instance, did go from full-time down to 3 days and tried to use a bit of their leave flexibly or something like that to increase their take-home pay each week, but they still got the benefit of being able to reduce their hours.
So they, in that example, somebody who was full-time would effectively remain full-time, but they would have access to their leave in a more flexible way. That's good for the employee in terms of maintaining their income, good for the employer in terms of the utilisation of accrued leave, which otherwise continues to increase in value.
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of benefits to employers from reducing leave liabilities, as we know.
What about long service leave?
So long service leave is one of those leave types that this clause allows to be used or taken flexibly. So it's normally taken in weeks, but it does allow that that flexible use.
So just in terms of something like red circling, though, where somebody does reduce their hours, what does red circling do?
So red circling, so we talked a little bit before about the disincentives for people to transition to retirement, such as the current operation of the agreement that says that long service leave is taking at the contracted hours. What the red circling enables is for a employer to circle, or red circle that full-time entitlement, but work something differently moving forward. So it almost preserves the benefit of the full-time long service leave provision, but doesn't act as a disincentive to continue employment in a part-time capacity.
If someone were to move from, say, 5 days a week down to 2 days a week, or if they were to move into a different, less senior role, that's where that could be relevant?
Yeah, so that's the same principle, is that the value of the long service leave isn't lost to that person, notwithstanding the different arrangements moving forward. And often those different arrangements are an alternative then to them leaving the workforce. Mm. So it's not that the value of the long service leave is any way diminished for the employer, because the alternative for the employee is to leave and get that cashed out, and that's often not in either party's benefit.
So the second subclause goes to the issue of how these arrangements can be entered into. What are the options under that clause?
Yeah, so the there's a range of situations where a flexible transition to retirement scenario may play out. So, for instance, as part of a flexible working arrangement, or an agreement in writing between the parties, or any combination of the two. So it doesn't strictly have to be one or the other, it can be a combination of those two. The other thing that the Health Professionals and Health and Allied Services Agreement identifies as a potential vehicle for a transition to retirement arrangement is a flexible individual flexibility agreement.
So the fact that that's not in the nurses or the mental health, though, doesn't mean that that's not still one of the tools available by which to arrive at a transition to retirement.
No, so the fact that that's not in the nurses agreement, for instance, and or that they're not really identified in the mental health agreement doesn't change the fact that people can still access those.
So, Tim, for those who may not be familiar with the term, what is an individual flexibility agreement?
So the individual flexibility agreement is an opportunity for the employer and the employee to vary some of the terms of the agreement to suit the individual needs of the two.
And from memory, that those arrangements are limited to a particular menu, that is, particular items. What are the items that can be subject to that individual arrangement?
So things such as arrangements for when work is performed, overtime rates, penalty rates, allowances, and also leave loading are all the things identified as being those that could be subject to an individual flexibility arrangement.
It's inevitable, of course, that would be a matter of agreement between the parties in the context of a transition to retirement. That's the nature of it, but it's probably worth emphasising that those always must be the subject of genuine agreement between the parties.
That's right, and the employee can't be worse off overall either. It's an important component of that individual flexibility arrangement that the employee is not disadvantaged.
We've touched on a couple of examples of transition to retirement arrangements, but just for the sake of being a little bit more exhaustive, what are the examples of a transition to retirement?
Yeah, we've spoken about a few already, but the clauses specify what the not in an exhaustive way, but they do identify a number of arrangements that could be entered into, such as a reduction of working hours, so going from full-time to part-time. I think we talked about that before. Also a job share arrangement, or working in a position at a lower status or rate of pay. I mean, again, there's some slight differences between the between the health professionals and health and allied services. For instance, they use status, whilst the nurses' agreement uses classification, but it has the same effect.
What about the mental health agreement?
So the mental health agreement is a little bit different again. That refers to purchase leave as an option to facilitate a flexible approach to transition to retirement.
Just in terms of something like purchase leave, because the list is not exhaustive, then really those options would be available under any agreement that has a purchase leave option.
Yeah, that's right. So, I mean, the good thing about it is that whilst the agreements in some places do identify different things, they're still available to all the agreements.
So one of the options we were talking about before is the flexible use of some leave entitlements, particularly annual leave and long service leave. Do all of the provisions in the agreements contain an option for the flexible use of annual leave and long service leave?
They do, yes. So whilst the other... So again, they have this concept of flexible use of long service leave and annual leave to facilitate. Really, it's where you reduce your hours but want to maintain that full-time wage.
And in terms of the nurses and midwives and the health and allied management and administrative workers and the health professionals agreement, those three, which are particularly on foot with each other, some of those agreements have a couple of examples.
Yes, so they, and really explains about how it works. It talks about what happens if you reduce your hours, what happens if you use additional leave entitlements. I think the important thing to note with the flexible use of the long service leave and the annual leave is that whilst the other options are by mutual agreement, it does set the bar a little bit differently for the flexible use of the long service leave and annual leave, in that it can't be unreasonably refused. Now, so that's a little bit of a difference between the two sections or the two categories of mechanisms that we're talking about.
Now, we did talk about what that meant when we were preparing these agreements. And in particular, we had a mix of feedback with regards to the flexible use of long service leave, particularly the use of long service leave for periods of less than a week.
Yes.
And my recollection is that there were some members who thought that their payroll systems would struggle to administer periods of long service leave for less than a week. There were other employers who were confident that their systems could. But the ability to administer it would constitute a basis, a reasonable basis for potentially refusing or if you can accept it, then refusing to do so might be an unreasonable ground for refusal.
Well, I think everyone agrees that that in principle these things are good things and that they've got their place in certain circumstances. Now, if employers, for whatever reason, can't do it, and that may be a system issue, as you've identified, or for whatever other reason.
It also may be a timing issue. It may well be that at this point in time that some may struggle, that may change over time.
Particularly in areas where it's a senior role and it will be difficult to replace it at smaller fractions. There's a whole host of reasons why it might not be reasonable. It's worth saying that the mental health agreement doesn't have that unreasonably withhold barrier to the clause.
I guess so, with any provision of the agreement, that kind of idea is probably implicit in most requests.
That's right.
So just in terms of the examples that that are given in a couple of the agreements.
So the first example is using accrued long service leave or annual leave for the purpose of reducing the number of days worked. and we've talked about that one.
But retaining their status.
But retaining your status, that's right. The second one is accepting appointment to a role that has a lower hourly rate of pay and or reduced hours. And that talks about how the mechanisms behind how that would operate.
And is the mental health agreement similar?
So, I mean, it has those... It doesn't have those examples. It doesn't have the clause that's in the in those other agreements, but it would still operate the same way if that's what you were going to do.
So it still enables the red circling, for example, of long service leave.
And many people were doing that prior to these provisions being entered into the agreements.
So just to recap and go over the essential ingredients with regards to transition to retirement, what are the key things that members should bear in mind?
I think the important parts are that the transition to retirement provisions provide a framework to remove some of the disincentives to retirement in order to keep people in the workplace longer, and that benefits both the employee and the employer. I think the second one is that they are by agreement, except for the red circling of long service leave, which won't be unreasonably withheld. But again, I think that that unreasonably withheld goes to all discretionary things within the agreement. Thirdly, the circumstances may change, and so people are not forced to resign at the end of that. It is about an intention. And finally, the written agreement should be comprehensive so that both parties know exactly what the agreement is.
I think it's always important to emphasise that this is a facilitative provision. It's intended to support employers and employees to reach agreement.
Well, that's right. I mean, we know that in the industry that a lot of people were doing it because they've turned their mind to it. This provides the opportunity for those that weren't with the concept and the idea so that they can do it if they wish to.
Tim, that seems an appropriate point at which to stop, to get changed out of these suits, into the golf clothes, and join George W. Bush on the golf course. Thanks very much, Tim.
Thank you, Stuart.
And thank you, George.